Right. Okay. And we'll now. Right. So here, good evening. Here we have the beginning of the Seder of the week. Vayishma Yitro Kohen Midyan. And Jethro, that is the father-in-law of Moses. And he's a priest of Midian. In other words, a priest to idolatry. Now, Rashi does tell us later on that, in fact, he's given up this idolatry. But it's an interesting point that he's introduced as a priest of Midian, Choten Moshe, the father-in-law of Moses, and he's heard et kol asher asa lekim le Moshe l'Yisrael amo, everything that God had done for Moses and Israel, his people, ki hotzi Hashem et Yisrael mimitzrayim, that God had taken the Israelites out of Egypt. Now, what I'd like to do is look at what Rashi says. So we're moving to Rashi's commentary. And there we see, Vayishma Yitro and Jethro heard. What was the particular report which he heard so that he came? Rashi answers, the division of the Red Sea, Kriyat Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, and the war with Amalek, which is written about in Mechilta and in the Talmud. Okay, so now we move. We'll have the Nigun, the Maimonigun. Oh, ya. Oh, yeah, yiddam ba yum ba yum ba yiddam ba yum ba yum. Hi, yam ba, hi, yam ba, hoo, ya, yadadam bum. Oh, yeah, yadadam bum. Oh, yeah, hoo, yeah, hoo. Vayishma Yitro Kohen Midian Choten Moshe. And Jethro, Yitro, the priest of Midian, the father-in-law of Moses, heard. Et kol asher asa lekim leMoshe Yisrael amo. Everything that God had done for Moshe and Israel, his people. Ki hotzi Hashem et Yisrael mimitzrayim, because God had taken the Jewish people out of Egypt. Uferesh Rashi comments. Ma shmua shama, what is it that he heard which made him come? Uva, kriyat yam suf, the splitting of the Red Sea. Now, that's the focus of the discourse. As I remember, the discourse doesn't talk about the other term that Rashi says, the battle of Amalek, but the splitting of the Red Sea. V'tzarech lahavin, now we have to understand this. Ma inyan kriyat yam suf lecha. What is the relationship of the splitting of the Red Sea to him? We're talking about the giving of the Torah. That's what the Sedra Yitro is about. This Sedra is going to have the Ten Commandments. Everyone will stand, we'll hear the Ten Commandments. It'll be like, according to Rabbi Shneur Zalman in his book Torah, it'll be as if we heard the Ten Commandments for the at the original time spoken by God. So what is the idea of the splitting of the Red Sea? How does that relate to this story, to this part of the story? Gam tzarich lavin, we also have to understand. Dahare parsha zuma daberet b'shivcho. This section of the Torah is talking in praise of Yitro. He went out of the land where he'd been born, El Amidbar, into the desert where the Jewish people were camped with Moses, lishmoa divrei Torah, in order to hear words of Torah from Moshe. Ve'im kein lama nizkar kan shu kohen Midyan. Why does it mention here that he is an idolatrous priest? Avodazara. He was a priest for idolatry. Okay. And a further point, it says after that, he's Choten Moshe. He's the father-in-law of Moses. If he's the father-in-law of Moses, there's a sense in which that means he's even greater than Moses. A person is duty-bound to pay honor to their father-in-law. So, and especially Rashi goes on, it's quoting Rashi, who says that when Moshe went out to greet his father-in-law who was coming, and then Aaron came and Aaron's sons and a whole lot of other people came as well. So Jethro was a very, very prominent figure. So if he's such a prominent figure and he's the father-in-law of Moses, so v'im kein doresh bir biyoter, it needs further explanation. Lama niskakan shukon Midian. Why does it say here that he is a priest of Midian, which means a priest to Avodah Zarah? Now then, the Rebbe refers to a discourse by the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rashab, who wrote a phenomenal series of discourses, which began in the year 1912. And those discourses of 1912, in fact, they went for several years, a kind of developing a theme, a continuous development of a theme, what's called a hemshech, a stream of discourses. So there, it asks a question about a detail in this verse. One of the things about this stream of discourses is that it can go into great detail into a topic and analyze it and present very subtle answers to the questions. Why does it say everything that God did for Moses and Israel, his people, and that God had taken Israel out of Egypt? Why does it divide it into two separate clauses? Why doesn't it just say he heard that God had taken the Jewish people out of Egypt? Why does it divide it into two different clauses in this in this sentence? And then we also have that there's the Yitro hearing. So there's Yitro hearing, then there's everything God did, and then there's taking the Jewish people out of Egypt. So it's like three different concepts. Now, what the discourse is, what the discourse by the fifth Rebbe is actually going to do, is talk about different dimensions of tzimtzum. And that's a very profound concept, which in fact in this discourse by our Rebbe is not elaborated here in full. He mentions it, and he says, and if you look there in the discourse by the fifth Rebbe, you'll see it in more detail. So there's layers upon layers in understanding this these words in the Torah, as we understand that each word in the Torah is like opening a doorway to all kinds of intimations of godliness in different ways. And that's what we have here. And so here we have it in this verse. Now, another thing that the fifth Rebbe quotes, which is a very famous thing, often referred to in Hasidic teachings, Gam mevi sham ma shekatub b'Zohar. Now, in the Zohar, it says on our parsha, the Zohar is divided up according to the Seder of the week, like the Midrash. So the Zohar says, the matan Torah haya al yedei hoda'at Yitro dafka. The giving of the Torah This tremendous event, which is described in this week's Sedra, happened because Yitro declared that now I know that God is God. The Chasher Amar Yitro, when Yitro said, Ata Yadati, now I know, Ki Gadol Hashem, that God is greater, Mikol Elokim, of all other gods, Kadenistalak Vityaka Kutcha, then the glory of God rose up. Bikare Ela Vatata, above and below, and after that, God gave the Torah. So, in other words, somehow or other, Yitro's recognition of God is a very important step in the whole historical process leading to the giving of the Torah, which is an absolutely climactic, unique moment in history. And a very important step towards it is Yitro, the priest of Midian, who has worshipped many or every kind of idolatry that there was, saying, now I know that the Lord is God higher than all other idols, all other forces. The fifth Rebbe asked the question, how can it be that the giving of the Torah, which is an absolutely crucial thing in the whole purpose of creation, why should that depend on this admission by Yitro that God is greater than all other forces? Okay, so let's just stop for a moment and see if we're all on board. Is there any comment or question at this point? Okay, it's all clear. Achon? Okay, Nina, it's okay, yeah? Right, okay. Right, so let's, Rabbi Lou, you want to say something?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay. Now we go back to the text.
Could it be something, may I ask?
Yeah.
Could it be the admission of Yitro implied also the admission of Moses somehow, in some way, because he was Itzchotno, he was to honor him, and maybe Moses had to be 1,000,000% true, if it's like that, is that God is God, and that's it. Could it be?
Well, I think Moses was, at this point, Moses is pretty sure that God is God. I mean, he's been through the whole process of the plagues in Egypt and the splitting of the Red Sea, which was in last week's Sedra. But there's another dimension that the discourse wants to bring out by the fact of Yitro. Sort of giving his, declaiming that God is God above all other forces. So it's something special that Yitro particularly is able to bring to the table.
To do with Moses. So it's nothing to do with Moses. Moses was already 100% sure. And
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
yeah,
Okay.
yeah.
I'm wondering whether there may be something to do with the rest of the world being a witness, and that if someone as great as Yitro, who must have been recognized, I suppose, in the known world at that time, however far that reached, if he was going to bear witness to this as something
Test.
beyond normal, and to give his full support to it, whether that is something that is even an example for us in our own days, that when we say that the rest of the world will, like we say in Alaina and that sort of thing. I don't know, it's just ramblings going on in my head.
Well, no, that's a very interesting point, but the problem is that Yitro is seen as far as the nations of the world is concerned, he's a controversial figure. The fact that he stopped serving idols is something that's had a bad effect on his relationship with society. And that's why when Moses came to the well, where Jethro's seven daughters were supposed to be drawing water, but the shepherds wouldn't let them draw the water because they looked down on them, because their father had been a great idolater, has now stopped serving idols. What a shocking thing, right? In Greece, Socrates was put to death because of disrespect for religion, because he didn't believe in Greek idols. So Jethro is, there's this criticism against Jethro. Okay, so let's.
I don't know whether this may be also, you may not want to consider this at all, but something that's always puzzled me at around to do with Yitro and Moshe was that I believe Yitro imprisoned Moshe Rabbeinu for a long time, a number of years even. And so there was something that was going on in their relationship before Moshe married his daughter as well. So it wasn't just this part of the story is quite superficial in that it doesn't go into any detail about what sort of relationship they may have had and built upon.
That's very interesting. I believe it's in Targum Yonatan, this story. And then Moshe was in the garden of Yitro and he saw this staff sticking into a rock and he pulled it out of the rock. And, so there's a whole other dimension of their relationship. Now, I haven't seen a Chabad Hasidic explanation of that particular area. And sometimes one takes a certain line within a midrashic depiction of a relationship or a history of what happens. And then that's the one which is explained in Hasidic teachings. And that becomes sort of the easiest way to understand it. So it could be that somewhere there's a discourse or a sicha which discusses that. I believe it's Targum Yonatan, and it's probably in some other midrash as well, that side to it. So obviously, if you had a modern writer who's going to write a novel, Moses and Jethro, a lot to write. That's but fair enough. I mean, that's a very interesting point. And it could be that what this discourse is basically saying is that Jethro's knowledge of idolatry and secular knowledge is being brought into the picture in order for the Torah to be given. Because the Torah is not just a matter of a beautiful radiance of holiness, it is transforming the unholy. And the transformation of Yitro's knowledge from a knowledge of idolatry, and in some discourses, I can't remember whether in this one as well, not only idolatry, but sort of science and secular wisdom, revealing the holiness which is there, that is an important step for the giving of the Torah, because the giving of the Torah is the way in looked at through the lens of this discourse and many other discourses giving, the same sort of perspective, is that the goal of the giving of the Torah is to transform that realm which hides God and conceals God and is negative, even to the level of being idolatrous or opposed to godliness, to transform that so that it recognizes God. And that's a crucial thing. So the Torah is not just a matter of God speaking. We know that it's not God speaking to the angels. The angels argue with God in Tractate Shabbat. where it talks about the whole idea of the giving of the Torah. So the angels argue with God and they say, keep your glory in heaven. What are you doing giving the Torah to human beings? And then there's a kind of a contest between Moses and the angels. And Moses says to them, what does it say in the Torah? It says, I'm the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. Did you angels go into Egypt? No. So that shows the Torah is not for you. It's for us human beings who were in Egypt. And he goes through basically the Ten Commandments, showing that they are commandments for human beings with all the difficulties and passions and negative possibilities that human beings have. So the Torah is for us. Okay. But then there's a further dimension. So these human beings, okay, so they've got various negative passions, but they control them and they're very holy and they're holy people. And what Jethro is doing is showing how Torah also crosses the line into the realm of unholiness and redeems that as well. So that's really, I think that's the theme of this discourse. It's redeeming the unholy. And the fact of Jethro coming along and recognizing God expresses that redemption of the unholy, which he himself has done in his own personal life, and is really the theme of what the Torah is doing. Okay, so let's go back into the text. Now, so then on line seven, well, having called there, in order to understand all this, that's on the second page. Yesh lagdim tchilo bi'ah chidusha b'matan Torah. We have to understand what is special about the giving of the Torah. Shebishvil zeh haya tzarich liot kodem inyan hodat Yitro. And if we can understand what's special about the giving of the Torah, we'll understand that there had to be the declaration by Yitro. Now, so then comes a way, a theme. The Rebbe presents the theme, which is very often found in the Midrash and in Rashi and other rabbinic texts, that the avot, the patriarchs, knew Torah, or not only the patriarchs. Torah was known before the giving of the Torah. The lechora, because at first sight, inyana Torah kvar haya b'olam, the idea of Torah was already in the world, lifnei matan Torah, before the actual giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. Ki be'etzma Torah, because the whole nature of Torah is yesh la keshev v'shaychut el ha'olam, Torah relates to the world. And there's the famous saying of the sages, Alpayim Shana Kodma Torah Le'olam. Torah came 2,000 years before the world. Right, so what does it mean 2,000 years before the world's created? How can you count years? And this is explained in various ways in Hasidic teachings. It's actually a passage quoted by a Bar Mitzvah boy in the discourse which a Bar Mitzvah boy says in the Chabad custom. So the Torah came 2,000 years before the world. Now, the fact of saying the Torah was there before the world indicates that the Torah has a relationship with the world. If the Torah was in a completely different plane, it's got nothing to do with the world. But no, it's before the world. And then it expresses it as 2,000 years. That means there's a specific time. However, we're going to understand what that specific time is. Does it mean the Sfirot, the Chochmah, wisdom, understanding? But it is showing that there is a connection with the world. Further, also before the creation of the world, there's a further point that then when the Torah was, then when the world was created, there was study of the Torah. We learn in one midrash, Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, the chapters of Rabbi Eliezer, that the idea of learning Torah, which aspect? Sod ha'ibur, a complicated dimension which is called the secret of intercalation. In other words, there's a certain time when we make an extra month in the year in order to balance the lunar year and the solar year. And this is quite a complicated area of Torah thought. Most Torah scholars today do not know properly how this is applied. There's the Rambam laws of the sanctification of the new moon, which goes into details, which hundreds of thousands of people study, and most of them find it very difficult to understand, including me. So this is a complicated area. And what it's saying that Adam HaRishon, Adam the first man, maybe he learnt it together with Eve, they knew, or he knew, the secret of how you balance the lunar year and the solar year in the Jewish calendar. Of course, the balancing of the lunar year and the solar year is a very important spiritual feat, because the lunar year means one thing spiritually, the solar year means another thing, and the fact that they balance out together is an important movement within the world of spirituality, the spherot, the divine emanations. And so balancing them is a very profound thing, and Adam knew how to do it. V'hu masa inyan ze ledorot shel ha'acharav. He transmitted that to the generations after him. Ubepratiot, and then further, there's the idea of studying Torah among the Jewish people, as it says in the Talmud. In addition to what we heard before from the Midrash Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, that it says, Avraham zaken v'yoshev b'yeshiva. Abraham was an elder sitting in a yeshiva. Isaac, his son, was an elder sitting in yeshiva. Jacob was an elder sitting in yeshiva. In other words, they all studied Torah. It is mentioned here in the discourse, one of the books attributed to Abraham is Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation. And that is a book. It's available in English translation, and it's around. And the tradition is that that was written by Abraham. So there you have the whole idea of Abraham being a scholar and his children, Isaac, Jacob, and so on. And that even when the Jewish people were in Egypt, they still studied Torah. And then there was studying Torah for Amram, that's the father of Moses. And in fact, he in Egypt was commanded some extra laws, which is in the Rambam. This is something I wanted to look up before. Does Rabbi Lu know what this is?
What's the question?
What are the extra laws that were given to?
The Rambam, when he speaks about the how the mitzvahs came, Adam had six mitzvahs and Aaron had mitzvahs, and he said that the Amram were given some mitzvahs, Yetam Mitzrayim, as the leader. I don't think he enumerated them. And when he speaks about the Yeshiva mitzvahs and all that, by the Tayag mitzvahs, he says he that Avram davened Shacharis.
You're right. And so I've got the Rambam in my hand. So he said, you're quite right. He says, and in Egypt, Amram was commanded further mitzvah, and he doesn't enumerate what they are. Okay.
Yes.
So this itself is a direct quote of the Rambam, and it gives the source where it is in the Rambam in notes 11. So there we have the idea of people studying Torah, having mitzvah. And so there was the idea of learning Torah also for Moses, not only because he was the son of Amram, but as a leader of the Jewish people, And it's talking here about his study of Torah before the Torah was given. And he was studying for the, like he was 18 when the Torah was given. So all that time before, there was Torah study for him in some form. So therefore, Im Kein, therefore, Doresh Bir, there has to be an explanation. So if there's all this evidence in all kinds of ways among the teachings of the sages, that they understand that Torah was studied by the patriarchs, by Moses, by his father Amram, what is special about the giving of the Torah? And that also brings into focus why, before the giving of the Torah, do you have to have this declaration by Yitro, by Jethro? Now, then comes a very, very popular theme in Chabad thought, which any teenager can state. Achainyan hu, the thing is as follows. Dehine yadua, it's known. Shelifnei matan Torah, that before the giving of the Torah, there was a decree, a divine decree, or some kind of decree. De'elyonim lo yadu tachtonim. The upper realm should not descend to the lower realm, but tachtonim lo yalu le'elyonim. And the lower realm should not ascend to the upper realm. So, in other words, there's a distinction between the spiritual and the physical. They're in two completely different domains. Spirituality is something we can understand. We can look for spirituality. We can gaze at the spiritual. We can devote ourselves to the spiritual. The material is the opposite side of the scale. It's the opposite side of the polarity, the opposite polarity, and they do not meet. And the giving of the Torah was the dissolution of this decree, the deconstruction of this polarity, so that the physical and the spiritual can meet. No longer is there a distinction there that it's only spiritual or only physical. A thing can be a combination of spiritual and physical together. And the reason for this, now it gives here a very profound reason, and let's see if we can understand it together. Delifnei matan Torah, before the giving of the Torah, hayarak inyan hagiluyim shebatorah, there were only the giluyim, the revelations of Torah. All this I'll try and work out with you in a moment. Kamosha Katuv, as it's written, the Torah or Torah is light. So there was the radiance of Torah. V'hachidush v'matan Torah, and the new thing at the giving of the Torah, hu shenimshach ha'etzer, is that the essence, which is higher than the revelations, higher than the light. Sitro, a exalted realm that is called by the term, he makes darkness his hiding place. And another way of describing that, even deeper, Ad la'atzmuto umahuto yitbarech, till we come to the very essence and inner nature of the divine. Now, I'm going to stop sharing for a second. I'm just going to try and understand this together. There is the essence, and the essence is beyond. From the essence proceeds a radiance. And in terms of that radiance, there is the idea of spirituality. Yes. But it's very clear that some things are spiritual and other things are not spiritual. Where there's the radiance, that's brightness and divinity in some form. But then there are other realms that are dark and do not have that radiance. So that's the spiritual and the physical. And we have to see that they are very separate. And if you want to be spiritual to that extent, you have to give up the physical, right? As a common theme in world cultures of celibacy or something like that in order to attain a spiritual state. So that is the state of existence before the giving of the Torah. When the Torah was given, the essence is revealed. And the essence is revealed not as radiance, but as essence. And that essence pervades everything, and it's there on every level. And that's why the Torah talks about what food we should eat, and issues about intimacy and marriage, and things to do with the possessions of a person. And if someone has an ox and the ox gores a cow or something like that, it's talking about the simplicities, the material aspects of life. And it's bringing godliness into those dimensions. So that's Torah. Torah is revealing the godly in every aspect of life. And it does so, and that's the very beautiful expression that is here in this discourse, by revealing the essence. And when the essence is revealed, then everything is connected with the essence of the divine. So that is what is special about the giving of the Torah. And this is going to help us understand why Jethro's declaration is an important component. Okay, so at this moment, is there any question anyone would like to ask? Or comment? Okay, so let's let the discourse unfurl itself. Yuvan. Now, this can be understood through what the Rebbe spoke about in the previous discourses. Now, it's interesting that while the previous Rebbeim, in a very, very clear way, produced a stream of discourses, which might last 6 weeks or 6 months or 2 years sometime, and it's very clearly identifiable that they are one discourse is picking up from where the discourse before stopped, and it says it very clearly. To understand the above, we have to consider what we said last week, in the discourse last week, X, Y, Z, and then it goes on and discusses that. The Rebbe's discourses very often form a hemshich, form a stream of discourses, but without doing it in a very overt way. It's just that the Rebbe is developing a theme. And as he says over here, in the previous discourses, I've spoken about this, and now we're going to explore it a little bit further. The tchilat kol seder shtal shelut haita. The beginning of the whole downchaining of worlds was through tzimtzum. Now, tzimtzum is the contraction or veiling of the divine radiance, so to speak, so as to make it possible for the universe or the spiritual universe, the world of Atzilut, the world of creation, the world of emanation, to be created. Because if the intense, pure radiance of the divine is there, where can a universe, which is a concealment of the divine and a finite universe in some sense, how can that fit in? So there has to be a veiling, or the term used is tzimtzum, which means contraction, which could be interpreted as a sort of the radiance is drawn to the side, There's a lot of Kabbalistic discussion of this idea. So there's the idea of tzimtzum, of this veiling before existence can be created by God. But also, now then there's another point, the Rebbe adds. Shagama or tzimtzum, even the radiance that was there before the tzimtzum, in order that that radiance should be there, there had to be an earlier tzimtzum, an earlier stage of tzimtzum, an earlier stage of veiling. But ad shegama inin, till when you come to the very beginning, so to speak, miyad mahuto, you've got the idea of the divine essence. So what is there after that essence? Whatever it is, however you're going to define it, and there are all kinds of different ways that it's spoken of in Chabad Hasidic form, the only way that you can come to something in any sense different to the divine essence means there must be some kind of veiling. And that's why the sages say, now you see, there's this, now what we're looking at is a very heavy Kabbalistic concept. And the Kabbalistic concepts interleave with the sayings of the rabbis. So there's a famous saying of the rabbis, Ad shelo nivra olam, before the world was created, Hayahu shmo bilvad, there was God and his name alone. Now, that has got a kind of a Kabbalistic explanation. What does it mean? The Gam Kadeshia Inyan Hu Shmobilvad, in order to get to that state where there is he and his name, Tzarich Liot Inyan Tzimtzum, there had to be a Tzimtzum, a veiling before that. Because the essence, the ultimate essence, it's not him and his name, it's just the essence, without any details, without any. You couldn't say he and his name. So, in order to get from the essence to the position that there's he and his name, there is a process, and that process includes symptom availing of the light. Over Matan Torah. Now, this is I might be wrong. But I think this is a point where Chabad Hasidic teaching reveals a dimension that is not actually there in the Kabbalistic writings of Rabbi Isaac Luria. The Kabbalistic writings of Rabbi Isaac Luria begin in the book Eitz Chaim, the Tree of Life, begin with the Tzimtzum that we mentioned at the beginning, that there was the radiance of the divine, and then that was that filled, everywhere. And in order for there to be any kind of creation, there had to be the Tzimtzum, and then begins the whole process of creation of different levels of spiritual world, and all kinds of different things happening, including the breaking of the vessels, and then finally you get the world of Tikkun, the world of repair. And that's the beginning of the Sfirot as we know them and talk about them in the world of emanation, Atzilut, and Bria, creation, and so on. And then we have this world. So that's the sort of Kabbalistic picture. But this is a strain in Chabad Hasidism, I believe, which goes beyond that picture and presents the idea of a tzimtzum, which is earlier, a veiling, which is earlier. Now, I think the discourse that we learned last 2 weeks ago, it spoke about three levels of tzimtzum before this first tzimtzum. And it might be that, for example, in the teachings of Rav Moshe Cordovero, who was another great Kabbalist, there might be something of this kind. But anyway, for us, it's something that is expressed in Chabad Hasidic teachings, and it's, as it were, going to a higher level than the explanations of Rabbi Isaac Luria, even that. Obamatan Torah. So at the giving of the Torah, Nimshach Lamata, Ha'inyan Shelifnei HaTzimtzum. What happened at the giving of the Torah is that that very exalted dimension that's before all the tzimtzumim, all the different veilings, ad libchinat yashet choshech sitro, to that level that can be called he makes darkness his hiding place, that's what is being revealed at the giving of the Torah. It's absolutely incredible. The giving of the Torah is revealing the very, very essence of the divine beyond all these Kabbalistic levels and even beyond what it says in the Tree of Life of Rabbi Isaac Luria. V'yesh lomar, and one can suggest, now he is referring to a beautiful passage in the evening prayer, and it's explaining it in these terms. Golel o mipnei choshech. God rolls light before darkness and darkness before light. Now that phrase, which is in the evening prayer, which is said every day, this is now being interpreted according to this whole history of pre-Tzimtzum. What it means is, not only what's explained elsewhere, that God rolls away the radiance of the infinite before the Tzimtzum, because of the darkness of the Tzimtzum, and he rolls away the darkness of the Tzimtzum because of the radiance of the line of light that comes into creation, creating the worlds after the Tzimtzum. In other words, you have brightness, darkness, brightness. So there's the brightness of the radiance of the divine, then the darkness of the Tzimtzum, then the brightness of the line of light, which actually does create the worlds. So that's the Tree of Life level, the Kabbalistic book Tree of Life. Ele Yatel came, but even more, the Golelo Mipnei Choshech, he rolls away the light before the darkness. That means The light comes mipchinet hachoshech shelamayla me'or. The light comes from the darkness which is higher than light. So that's a completely different way of thinking. That there is, at the beginning, there's ultimate darkness, but there is a light which comes from that darkness. And that's the light of the essence, which is being revealed at the giving of the Torah, and it's being given to us. So in other words, what is happening, a very important thing that's happening at the giving of the Torah, is darkness becoming light. That's a crucial issue, darkness becoming light. Now we're going to be able to come to Jethro. By having this introduction, that the chidush, the special quality of the giving of the Torah, was the revelation of this realm of darkness, we can now understand why, before the giving of the Torah, that we had to have the declaration by Yitro. Because it says in Kohelet, in Ecclesiastes, v'ra'iti ani, I saw that there is an extra quality to wisdom over folly, like the extra quality of light over darkness. Right, King Solomon makes a statement, and there is an explanation of these words, that the extra quality of the light is specifically from the darkness. By sifting and transforming the darkness, you get a level of light which is very exalted that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And similarly, there is the special quality of wisdom over folly, that from the folly itself, you get something extra special in wisdom. Now, what does it mean by folly here? It can't mean literally folly. If you're saying that wisdom is better than stupidity, obviously wisdom's better than stupidity. It means here something which, in comparison to true wisdom of holiness, is something which, in comparison, could be folly, as it explains in the discourse by the fifth Rebbe, that what it means here is chokhmot chitzoniyot, external wisdoms, right? So there's been a long battle or uneasy relationship between Jewish wisdom and secular wisdom. The Talmud speaks about this. It often calls it Greek wisdom. So in the Talmud, there's a sort of battle between Jewish wisdom of Torah and Greek wisdom. And there are all kinds of interesting passages in the Talmud, which have they're ambiguous sometimes, that there's some people who are not allowed to study these Greek wisdoms, and there are other people who do. And so that whole relationship is a very subtle, ambiguous relationship in the pages of the Talmud, and it goes on being so all the way through Jewish history. You get figures like Maimonides, the Rambam, who are extremely wise in their knowledge of secular thoughts, Greek wisdom, Greek philosophy, medicine for that matter. Then you have another path, as it were, which rejects any such study and wants to study only Torah study. So here we're talking about these external wisdoms, and they're called folly in relation to the wisdom of holiness. So there's the wisdom of holiness. Now, but why is that? Because the difference between wisdom of holiness and wisdom of the klipa, the wisdom which conceals godliness, is that wisdom of holiness is selfless, it's bitul. And wisdom of unholiness is ultimate pride, right? So the idea, you know, the proud figure who is the expert, in a particular field of knowledge, and very often it is completely impossible for anyone to say anything that this expert doesn't agree with, right? The politics of the academe, like there was in Jewish studies, there was a certain figure who was completely controlled. The way people thought in Jewish studies on certain areas, and only when he passed away were people able to openly say what very good points in analysis of the sources. Right, I'm thinking of Gershon Sholem versus that same Moshe Idel. After Gershon Sholem passed away, Moshe Idel was able to give a much more balanced perspective of the role of Kabbalah in Jewish thought, and in relation to Talmudic thought, halachic thought, which Gershon Sholem wasn't able to accept. Now, and if anyone wanted to write something that Sholem wasn't pleased with, you have the conflict between Sholem and Weiss, which Weiss had to leave Jerusalem and come to England, never finished his PhD. So these are the dramas, and I'm sure they are in every field. So there's this yeshua, this pride, which is there in secular wisdom, whereas the wisdom of Kedusha should bring, of holiness, should bring to ultimate selflessness. So therefore, since this wisdom of non-kedusha, secular wisdom, can lead to such pride, it's called folly in comparison with sacred wisdom. However, through the sifting and the transformation of this secular wisdom, in fact, you get an extra dimension coming into the sacred wisdom. And so there you get, as in another discourse that I was looking at today, that's the you got the Rambam taking the ideas of the Greek astronomers, and applying it to the Sod HaIbur, right? The whole idea of running the calendar, the Jewish calendar. And he wrote that down and it became part of the Torah. He put it in his book, Mishneh Torah, which is a book of all the halakha, all the laws of Judaism. And so now that section, which in its on one level, it's from Greek astronomy, even though the Rambam says that the prophets knew this before Greek astronomy knew it. But it had been lost. The transmission, the chain of transmission had been lost. And so now we have to pick it up from the Greeks. That is the secular knowledge that Yisro had, that Jethro had. He said, now I know, because he was a person who served every kind of idolatry. And that is the wisdom of Klipa, the wisdom of unholiness. And that includes secular wisdom of every kind. And through his admission that now I know that the gods and the holy teachings that God is teaching, this is higher than everything else, that is something which adds to the wisdom of holiness and to the radiance of holiness. And so now we can understand why we needed this declaration by Yitro in order to have the revelation of the giving of the Torah, because the revelation of the giving of the Torah came from that deep darkness, that realm, the darkness before light. And that deep darkness is where there's the extra radiance. And revealing that comes about through transforming and sifting the darkness. So Torah is not just a matter of revealing light. Torah is a matter of revealing light from darkness. And that's what makes Yitro a very important figure. And that's the idea of the extra light that comes from the darkness, that it comes from the darkness which is higher than the light, and therefore that when the light which comes from the darkness is there, the darkness is changed to light. And through that, the light is much more intense and its flow is specifically from that dark realm. And so that's why the verse stresses that he was a priest of Midian and that he was the father-in-law of Moses. Because here too, we see the extra dimension of the light that comes from darkness. Because the priest of Midian and the father-in-law of Moses, that is the idea of the priest of Midian, that means the wisdom of unholiness, which itself has a quality of yeshus, of pride. Because Midian, the word Midian is from the word madon umeriva, conflict. The word Midian means conflict, and that is total pride. And that is changed to something very exalted, that from being the priest of Midian, which means the priest of pride, he's become the father-in-law of Moses. Because when we say father-in-law in Hebrew, the word choten, father-in-law, relates to the word chut, go down a level. But choten Moshe, the father-in-law of Moses, means Yitro achieved the idea of descent. Now, this is a fascinating thing, and it relates to what you said, Rivka, about the relationship, and also what Nina was saying about the relationship between Yitro and Moses. Yitro had an effect on Moses, because Moses in himself is very exalted. There's a sense in which Moses is above the level of leadership of a people because he's from the world of thought. That's why he couldn't speak properly. He's in another realm. But Yitro achieved his quality of being father-in-law relates to the word chut going down. He was able to bring Moses down that he should be a leader of the people. And through this, there was also able to be the giving of the Torah, the descent that the upper ones come down below. And it's as if it's inferring, it's implying that Moses is one of these upper ones in a sense. And Yitro enables him to come down into the world because Moses is supposed to be the intermediary between the Jewish people and God, or the intermediary between the Jewish people and the Torah. But Moses in himself, in Yanohu Lamaila Mala, in himself, he's exalted, very, very exaltedly high. As it says about him, when he was given his name, Moses, I drew him out of the water, said the princess. She drew him out of the water, which is really talking about his spiritual dimension. He's from the upper water. And in order that Moses should be able to go down a level, that was through Yitro. And Nina, that might explain the whole conflict between Yitro and Moses, as expressed in the Midrash in Targum Yonatan. So that's an interesting perspective. As it says in the Midrash, that even when he was in Midian, he annulled, Yitro annulled idolatry, and this was brought about through Moses. Now, that's an interesting thing because there's the Rashi, which explains why the shepherds drove away the daughters of Yitro from the well, was because Yitro had already stopped serving idols, but maybe there was a further dimension to his stopping serving idols, which when Moses came along, he was able to achieve. And that means, in order that Moshe could have this achievement with Yitro, there had to be the step of Moshe coming down step by step. And after that, this would enabled him also to be the intermediary at the giving of the Torah. Because otherwise, Moses wouldn't have been the intermediary. He would have been on the high level of Torah, and he wouldn't have been able to reveal the Torah below. And that's also why the priest of Midian is changed into being the father-in-law of Moses with the extra radiance that comes from the darkness. Okay, so we're at a little turning point here. So any comments at this stage?
I'd like to know whether you or Rabbi Lou think that there is any comparison between these issues and today, what we can see from the awful darkness that we see that is surrounding us today.
In that case, who's Moshe Rabbeinu, Netanyahu
I wouldn't like to say. But I mean, can either of you see any sort of comparisons there and what we can take from that?
Trump? Rabbi Lou?
I'm thinking of generally of two points, but I'll just say the second one on this specific question that Mrs. Abrams just asked. It's not, the way I understand it, it's not only like you said in the Jewish studies field, in a specific academic field, how there is, a hierarchy and there's somebody who's very, very accomplished and very arrogant. The whole general mood in the world is divided amongst people. I'm talking in the secular world, non-Jewish world, in the academic scientific world, between people who are humble and people who are arrogant as a result of the knowledge. Generally speaking, there's a lot of knowledge in the world, and every day it's exponentially growing by the minute. So there are some people who I've heard somebody said, "Look, I know what Rabbi Akiva didn't know. What are you telling me to do? Follow what the Gemara says." I heard this from people, or what Rambam didn't know. And they know, or people say, oh, you have this question about what the whole purpose is or where it originally comes from. We'll evolve further in another 100 years or whatever it is. We're getting there. That's arrogance. And then there's another way of looking at it where, and you find this amongst many, probably millions of people in the scientific field as well, who stand in awe and realize the more that one knows, the greatest knowledge is to appreciate that what I don't know is infinitely more than what I do know. And I heard from Professor Branova. He was in Riga, and he was a candidate to the Nobel Prize. He was the highest ransom of an exit tax that the Soviets charged in the 1970s, according to the educational level. He was the highest refusenik to be let. He had the highest ransom to be paid. He was so big in the scientific field. And he was here in England, pardon? And he was here in England, and I heard him say that, and he was brought up in the communist system, and extremely accomplished. And he said that at some stage he asked himself, "What do I know? And I'm at the top of my field that my great grandfather didn't know that justifies me not putting on tefillin like my great grandfather did." And that was his step towards looking for knowledge, and he found Chabad, and he learned, and he became religious. He's a very great chassid. But he's also, and you hear him speaking. So he speaks about theoretical physics. It sounds Lahavdil, like Chassidus. He understands his own field in a deeper way as a result. So that's how I understand the Yisrael, it's not just people interpret the verse, the virtue of light out of darkness, meaning a light, which means when you come from the darkness and get into the light, you appreciate it more. No, it's taking that darkness itself and being able to see that that darkness is light, and therefore the person who appreciates this, their knowledge of secular is more authentic and is more meaningful and is deeper. It's not just that they happen to understand Gemara as well, Lahavdil. It means that because of this whole attitude to light, so you're saying today's world, it's a dark world, it's just before the redemption, so it's a time of darkness. That's the last plagues, we're all dark. But there's also light that's available, and our job is to hold on to the light, that's all.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, Nina, the way that I understood your question, I'm reminded when I visited many years ago Auschwitz. And this theme, Yashet Choshech Sitro, he makes darkness his dwelling place. That the essence of the divine is in ultimate darkness. That was very prominent in my mind on that visit. And I believe, looking at the world now, where it's most hideous darkness in all kinds of different ways, with a complete collapse of Western morality, which is based on the Torah, and it's now collapsed. And we see that in the way in which people respond to Hamas and the Jews and many other aspects of society. The way in which this stream of wisdom from the Torah and the light that it brought into the world. Is now unfortunately being eclipsed, seemingly. And in that darkness, there is the light beyond darkness, a higher level of of light. And that higher level, obviously, the light of morality that was there was not strong enough to prevent many evil things, including the Holocaust. And there's something else which has to be revealed, and that's the light of the essence. And that light of the essence means going through darkness. So it's as if we are walking through a patch in history which is totally dark, with the assurance from the Rebbe that we are actually walking into a world of light of Mashiach. And I think keeping that direction clear in our mind, that we're walking towards Mashiach and that all the negativities of all different kinds and the that's complete horrific responses that we see in all walks of life, the media, in the universities, and in society as a whole. That's the darkness that precedes the great revelation which we are part of, and our learning Hasidic teachings together is part of that revelation. Okay, so now we come to the last part of the puzzle that we're going to have time for, which is the splitting of the sea. So if you remember, the Rashi mentions the splitting of the sea and the discourses discussing this, what's it got to do with it? Rashi. This is also the comment of Rashi. What is it that Yitro heard? He heard about the splitting of the Red Sea. Now, the admission, the declaration of Yitro, in fact, comes through the splitting of the sea. Because the splitting of the sea means it's splitting all the veilings, all the tzimtzumim. That's what the splitting of the sea is. That even that the Yam Suf, the Red Sea as it's called, the Sea of Reeds, that sea means the attribute Malchut, kingship, the sphere of kingship. And that's on the lowest level. And that's why it's called Yam Suf. Suf is like the word, it means reed, but it also is like Sof, the end. It's the lowest level. And nonetheless, the sages say that when this Red Sea was split, all gatherings of water in the world were also split. And from this, we understand that all the way through the downchaining of the worlds, all the different veils and tzimtzumim and barriers, they were all split. Even those that are higher than the first tzimtzum that we spoke about before, and even higher than the radiance of the infinite, which is higher without end. Lamaila Maila, higher and higher and higher, relating to the discourse that we learned 2 weeks ago, which spoke about going higher and higher. And all this had the effect that Yitro, the wisdom of Klippa, the wisdom of unholiness, which is totally an expression of pride excluding the divine, that quality is transformed to light. And then it goes into like the questions that it asked in this discourse of 1912. And it says that they are the reason why the verse divides up into those different aspects. It's talking about different levels of tzimtzum. So the verse is hinting at different levels of tzimtzum, and that's the and that's the explanation. And he says, "Kamavur Sham." If you want to know about it, look there in that discourse, and you'll see. And that's what. So now we're just the last couple of paragraphs, brief paragraphs. That's what it means. Yitro, the priest of Midian, the father-in-law of Moses, heard all that God had done for the Jewish people, and through the revelation of the splitting of the Red Sea, when all the tzimtzumim, all the veilings were split, until this came down into not only it came down into vessels and garments and palaces. This is referring to like Kabbalistic dimensions. There's the vessel of the Sfirah, there's garments, there's palaces. All these are like, supernal dimensions, which are referred to in those verses, why the verses in several different segments. And through this, Yitro was transformed from being the priest of Midian, the idolatrous priest, the priest of unholy knowledge, so to speak, of secular knowledge, becomes the father-in-law of Moses, like the light which comes from darkness, and that has the effect achieving the revelation of the giving of the Torah, that it should be revealed from the level of he makes darkness his hiding place, and it comes right down into this lower world. Now, the Torah is eternal, says the Rebbe. And there's the idea of the giving of the Torah every single day. As it explains, Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains, that just as, what the saying of the sages from the Talmud, that just as then when the Torah was given, it was awe and fear and shake, trembling, so that is because that also now there is the idea of the giving of the Torah, that when we study Torah, we can feel the closeness to the divine, which is being expressed by the Torah teachings that we study, and especially hearing the Torah reading on Shabbat with the Ten Commandments, but in general, every time we study Torah. Only now, the intense revelation of the essence of the divine is concealed, and in the future, it will be revealed. And then it'll be understood. It'll be revealed in our understanding and grasping. As it says, V'nigla kvod Hashem, the glory of God will be revealed. V'ra'u kol basar yachdov, and all flesh will see together that the mouth of Hashem is speaking with the true redemption, the true and complete redemption through Mashiach Tzidkenu, with simcha v'tov levov, with joy and a happy heart.